anybody in that supply chain could be culpable, depending on who the FDA calls on.
Correct.
And my guess is it'll go in either direction. Whoever the FDA starts with, it'll go upstream or downstream.
First of all, the focus is on automation of capturing that lock code, date code information. That's still the important information that we have to capture at every step in our supply chain if we can. I know our supply planning team at IPC would love to know the lock code of a product every DC has, because sometimes we'll look at orders and say, wow, they've really overordered on shredded lettuce. But maybe they overordered 2 weeks ago, and the reason that order that they're placed right now is huge is because a lot of their shredded lettuce is going to expire.
Welcome, fellow food supply enthusiasts, to Farm to Fork, the innovators. I'm your host, David Maloney, president of DatumFS, and I've spent over four decades navigating the twists and turns of the food supply chain. But here's the thing. The journey is far from over, and the future is ripe with possibilities. On this podcast, we're diving deep into the stories and strategies that are reshaping the way we produce, distribute, and serve our food. From the trailblazers who laid the groundwork to the disruptors defining tomorrow, each episode is a journey into the heart of innovation. Our guest innovator today is Rick Buttner, a seasoned pathfinder with almost three decades in the food supply chain, recently retiring as a senior director of supply chain operations at Independent Purchasing Cooperative, the supply chain co-op for Subway restaurants. Join us for an insightful journey into Rick's experiences and his expertise as a leading voice in data-driven supply chain and traceability. To kick it off, Rick emphasizes the transformative power of implementing GS1 standards for your operations, providing a roadmap to navigate the intricate web of the food supply chain. Next, we dive into the crucial role of traceability in food service, learning from Rick how it not only shields your brand, but also enhances operational efficiencies throughout the chain. Rick will then demystify the costs associated with traceability for you and guide us through the array of technologies available for a streamlined and cost-effective process. Finally, we'll tackle the elephant in the food supply chain room, the Food and Drug Administration's Food Safety Modernization Act, focusing on Rule 204. Rick will unravel its complexities, discuss collaborative opportunities, and spotlight companies guiding you through the maze of FSMA 204 compliance. So buckle up, hit that subscribe button, and let's harvest progress together. This is Farm to Fork, the innovators, where the future of the food supply chain starts with this episode. Hi, everyone. This is David Maloney with Farm to Fork, the Innovators podcast. And with me today is Mr. Rick Buttner. Rick, welcome.
Thank you, David.
Yes. So before we dive into Rick, again, this podcast is hopefully a channel for the industry to learn more about what's happening around innovation in the food supply chain. And at least in the beginning, probably more of a lean towards the food service supply chain. But I think you're going to be real excited today to hear from Rick. Rick, I've known for a couple years now, and he is one of the cheerleaders for a progressing supply chain. So, Rick, tell us a little bit about yourself. So, who are you? How many years in supply chain, et cetera?
I started with a startup company I went to with a friend to start a chain of restaurants and truck stops. We were kind of a contract feeder in the truck stop industry and had huge buffets, and I had to, I sourced all the products, I managed the distribution, and had to make sure that products got to these restaurants. And they weren't all together. They were spread out from Connecticut to California. So we eventually wound up with 23, but that we'd have distributors who would service one restaurant. So that made the supply chain a little challenging. And then I went to Subway in 98 and stayed there until I moved to Miami for IPC in 2004 and worked. That's a purchasing co-op for Subway. And I stayed there until I retired at the end of August.
Congratulations.
To focus on consulting and helping other people make progress in this supply chain world.
And for those of you who don't know, IPC Subway, for particularly over the last, at least since I was involved with them in the last 5 years, really were some of the leaders around traceability, blockchain, et cetera. And we're going to dive into some of that today. So if I remember correctly, you were in operations before you got into, and when I say operation, I mean restaurant operations.
Correct.
Can you walk us through that and how that kind of shaped your career in supply chain?
Sure. And I think it's important because a lot of people think they have solutions, but unless you can unless you can implement it in a restaurant and get efficiencies in your operations, solutions don't always pan out. So I started, my first job was at a Hardee's restaurant when I was 16 years old. And I moved up into management by the time I was a senior in high school. And when I came home from college in the summer, I was a fill-in manager. So I've been in management really since I was 18 years old in the restaurant industry. After college, I did take a brief detour to Wall Street and did some did 3 years on Wall Street and realized that really was not what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I wound up getting back into food service, where I managed restaurants. I managed multiple restaurants. I managed multi-concept locations like travel plazas and really was involved in operations. I loved it because every day was different. Mm-hmm. You know, you have something different every single day, different people coming in, different challenges. But it's a grind to be in restaurant operations. So I finally got smart and started doing things like helping to develop brands. And then I took the opportunity to go to a big chain and work for Subway. Mm-hmm. And I was really, really surprised. I started with them, food safety quality assurance group, and I actually helped build the group. They really didn't have much talent in that group at that time. So I helped bring in food scientists and nutritionists and people that could really, you know, that really understood food safety quality assurance, helped develop the systems that they had for auditing and that type of thing. But doing it through the lens of what works in a restaurant operationally has always been very important. And when I came to IPC, which was 100% supply chain, I really led the charge for what programs we needed, what data we needed, how we could collect the data. That was a big part of what I did initially. And so I really became operationally focused for the supply chain organization. How could myself and my team support the logistics team, the distribution team, the sourcing teams, even the finance teams, to make sure everybody had what they needed data-wise, and look for systems and ways that we could develop and get the data that we needed if it wasn't readily available. So operations has been my focus once I got into supply chain.
And when you left, what was your title and your principal responsibilities? I mean, I think I kind of garnered it from that, but if you could summarize that.
When I left IPC, I was Senior Director of Supply Chain Operations. And primary responsibilities, we've managed the GS1 program, the adoption of standards. We managed all the programs that the supply chain teams needed for data, like AeroStream. We've been very involved in project management as well, helped lead some of the big projects, like Subway just rolled out slicers, and myself and my team led that project for IPC to ensure that slicers were available and could be delivered to restaurants. And then we had to manage the transition from pre-sliced to unsliced protein. So that type of work is what we always did. We're the ones that always explored things like digital twins, like, you know, data aggregation. So anything that the supply chain teams needed, we helped them get it. And either just helped through the implementation and then they took it and ran with it, or we kept managing that particular program.
Thank you. And for the sake of everyone in the audience, can you give us a little background, a quick background on GS1?
Yeah, GS1 is a standards organization, a nonprofit standards organization. And they've been around for quite a while, but they didn't have a food service division until 2009. So GS1 U.S. food service, and they're global also. So U.S. has different standards than, you know, some other countries, especially European countries, have different standards. But basically, GS1 is all about including everybody in the solution, which is one of the things that really drew me to it. When we joined the Food Service Initiative in 2010, we were one of the first operators to join the system. But they always have operators, distributors, and suppliers meeting together to solve problems, because it's important that everybody works as a community, or else we don't make progress. And that's, I think, been a key to their success. So we started adopting GTINs, global trade ID numbers. We then started adopting global location numbers and getting everybody to use those numbers, you know, going back to the GTIN. Subway had their own number for sliced turkey. Every distributor had their own number for sliced turkey. Every supplier had their own product number for sliced turkey. But we got them all to agree to use one number. You can keep your other numbers, and everybody did. Everybody kept their own numbers, but you know, have one number that ties to your number for turkey. So that's what the standards were. And once we did that, our data quality was just, you know, improved immensely. The amount of work to figure out what product a supplier was talking about or a distributor was talking about was those problems just went away once we truly adopted the standards. So GS1 is a standards organization. They really involve everybody in the ecosystem into the, you know, we all have an opportunity to work together to solve problems.
Yeah. And along those lines, so you've mentioned the term data quite a bit here already, right? And again, from my experience with you, you've always been a data champion, right? And how does, you said your, if I heard correctly, your kind of your data issues, or at least some of your data issues, went away with the GS1 standards. Is that fair?
That's very fair. Yes.
Can you walk us through an example, like whether it's sliced turkey or bottle ketchup or whatever that may be? Just so everybody understands how challenging that is.
Well, when we did a case study, I think it's still on the GS1 website, by the way, but we did a case study as part of a Lean Six Sigma project to understand how different all of our distributors, how different they described and the different numbers they had, and how challenging it was for us to know, and I'll just go back to sliced turkey, what sliced turkey was flowing through that distributor into our restaurants. Generally, we knew that we had allocated a certain supplier's product to a certain DC, but when it goes through redistribution, they might send them another company's turkey. But the challenge was, if that happened, that distributor didn't care. They had their own number for our turkey, and that's what they used. When we truly looked at what was happening, there was differences in almost 90% of our distributors' data versus what we had in our system. So who's right? So when you get to publishing using GTINs, you're publishing net weight, you know, case weight, case pack, all that information is part of what you're publishing through the GDSN, through the Global Data Synchronization Network. And once we started doing that, we realized that we had huge gaps in our supply chain data. We had suppliers that were putting higher net weight than case weight. We had suppliers that weren't putting the right ingredient decks in what they were sending to distributors. But we wound up discovering that there was such a discrepancy by using GS1 standards and publishing through the GDSN and having everybody use the same data, the same information for Subway Turkey, just greatly cleared up a lot of our challenges. Data mapping became so much easier. Our suppliers understood what every distributor had, improved our logistics. We had many cases where we had overweight trucks just because of the data that we had in our systems, or underutilized trucks. So there was just a lot of improvements in our data quality and efficiencies in what we were doing by publishing our product information through the GDSN.
And is it fair to say that drove cost efficiencies through the supply chain and quality optimization of quality of products through your supply chain?
Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. The one thing that's always been missing, though, and this is what we're going to talk about in a little while, has been knowing lock codes and date codes. And that's why we started adopting, once we had our product information right, just so before we published through the GDSN, we used to send Excel spreadsheets out to our distributors. This is what Subway Turkey is. This is all the information you need. And they would key punch it into their warehouse management system. And, you can imagine what that looked like. It wasn't always correct. So once we automated that and made that electronic and they got the publication, they could just upload it into their warehouse management system, we did see a lot of efficiencies. So once we did that, our next step was, how do we get traceability? So we started implementing GS1 128 barcodes, the linear barcode that included a GTIN, lock code, and date code. Those three things. That's what was on our GS1 128 barcodes. And we always envisioned that our distributors would scan those barcodes when they delivered it to our restaurants, so we would know what lock code, date code was being received at our restaurants. And we really pushed that initiative for several years, 4 or 5 years. And we got up to about 60% of our deliveries were being scanned at time of delivery, which was pretty good.
Industry-wise, very good.
Yeah. But then the pandemic happened and all scanning went away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, distributor, and I really can't blame them. Distributors had challenges just getting groceries out the door. And if they're going to spend 10 minutes scanning barcodes at delivery and they have 6 Subways on the truck, that's an hour that driver is spending scanning barcodes instead of making deliveries. And that just wasn't feasible. So they stopped all scanning. And then we started looking at how we could do it within restaurants. And with 21,000 locations, that's a little untenable to manage. But we encouraged operators to do it. And some did, some didn't. But with only partial information, we really didn't get to full traceability. And that's the focus now. Restaurants have to find a way to get to full traceability, at least for the items that are on the traceability list for the FDA.
Yep. And we'll talk about that more in a minute. But I want to be, somebody listening might think, well, wait a minute, Subway is way behind the times. And I just want to make it clear, right? By the way, this is Farm to Fork, the innovators. Subway was seen as a leader in this space. Right. And so I don't want somebody to think, well, they got involved with GS1 in 2010. They were behind the times. They were some of the leaders in this space. And Rick was the champion for that. Right. So there are some, and you can address this much better than I can, but from what I understand, there are some things being explored, whether it's Bluetooth scanning, et cetera, right? As opposed to having a manual scan. Mm-hmm. Where do you see that going? Or have you seen any progress in that? Or is there other tools that might be helpful for traceability?
Yes, definitely. There is progress being made. And it's one of two things. First of all, the focus is on automation of capturing that lock code, date code information. that's still the important information that we have to capture at every step in our supply chain if we can. And we're not going to ever, I don't care if you go to 2D barcodes that are faster to scan, manually scanning every case is time consuming. And there are days when people don't feel like doing it, so they won't. So if you don't capture all the information, you haven't solved the problem. So we have to find a way to automate how we capture that. And there's really two main ways right now that are being explored: RFID and Bluetooth IoT. Both of them, you can get labels, tags to put on your product that you can program information into these tags that includes the G10, the lock code, the day code. And then when it comes in the back door of the restaurant, you can, depending on the restaurant, there's a lot of different solutions here, but a lot of different ways you can do it. You can have a manual reader that you just wave by the pallet as it comes in the restaurant. You can have a wall-mounted reader that once it goes past there, it just automatically collects the information. But the idea is to make it automatic. You know that every time that product comes either in the back door or even out the back door, that you're capturing that information. You're capturing that product movement. So that's the way that companies are exploring to be able to meet the new FSMA regulations for traceability.
Yeah, and before we step into that, why is traceability so important?
Well, you know, being a quality assurance guy, if you have to do a withdrawal and you need to know where product is, you'd like to think you can find that out in hours and not days, because every time, you know, the longer it takes, the greater your risk for having an issue that'll make somebody sick. Mm-hmm. And I think we all remember, I think it was 2018, when the FDA just pulled the plug on all romaine lettuce. We're going to pull all romaine lettuce out of every restaurant, out of every grocery store. Farmers are going to have to plow their fields under, and just because they could not find what the root cause was. They couldn't find what lock code, what supplier, what farm was causing the issue. So that kind of pushed them into having to do something about traceability. But that's why it's important. It's important to keep the public safe when we know mistakes are going to happen. You know, there's going to be undercooked chicken because the oven wasn't hot enough when you started the batch. There's going to be issues, and being able to get it out of the supply chain before anybody receives it and gets sick is crucial. And to be able to have targeted withdrawals, knowing that it went to these 50 restaurants rather than having to pull every head of romaine lettuce in the country, is going to save the industry a ton of money too. So there's lots of good reasons.
Yep. And I would guess that brand protection is a big reason as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's start. You mentioned FSMA 204. Actually, before we get in there, just real quick, can you define, for the sake of everybody in the audience, what a lot code and a date code is? Because you've used those a couple times.
I have.
Yeah.
And a lot code is when a supplier runs a batch or a lot of product, not a lot, but when they run a batch of product, let's say, they put a code on it. Did they know every ingredient that went into it? They know where those ingredients came from. They know what makes up that product. So that is their lot code. They know what line it was made on, what time of day. That's what information they tie to a lot code. And no one else in the world can read their lock code and know exactly what they did, because that's their internal data. A date code is either a production date or an expiration date. So this product was made on 10/31/2023. There's a way they put that on the case. But with GS1 standards, you have what they call application identifiers for each of these. So you have an application identifier that tells you, that tells the scanner that The next information you're going to see is a lock code, and they have an application identifier that tells them this is a date code, and it can be a pack date, it can be a production date, it can be an expiration date, it can be a best before date. There's a lot of different types of date codes that you can have. But that's what's important to capture to know what's going into every restaurant.
So you can trace any potential problems back to the source very quickly. Is that fair?
That's fair.
As well as, I would guess, optimize quality throughout your supply chain. Is that fair?
That is fair as well, yes.
Okay.
And I will tell you, we did a pilot when I was at IPC with RFID where we tagged products coming into the restaurant. The tags were not put on, the RFID tags were not put on at time of production. But some of the efficiencies that we saw, we tagged everything, not just the items on the traceability list, but we tagged everything that came in, and we saw more accurate inventories being taken. They were taken much faster. So the cycle time to count everything that's in your restaurant was reduced to minutes from maybe an hour. We saw better rotation of products in the restaurant. We were able to hold distributors accountable for delivering short shelf life product. We didn't allow that in the restaurant, which improved the quality of the product coming into the restaurant. We were able to reduce waste. So there's a lot of efficiencies that can be gained if we can harness that information.
Thank you. All right. So FSMA 204, which we brought up a couple of times, what is it? You alluded to it earlier. What is it and why is it so important?
Well, FSMA, first of all, the Food Safety Modernization Act, was released back in 2012. And one piece of it that never, and that had a lot to do with import-export products, how you look at quality management within a plant, and there was a lot of different parts to that regulation. It was a huge bill. The one thing they did not address was product traceability, because no one really knew how to do it at that point. I mean, the industry had no real clue how they were going to address traceability. And so they spent a lot of time exploring it, but now FSMA Rule 204 was just released in November of last year. I can't believe it's been almost a year since it's been out. The rule's been out. But they granted the industry, well, first of all, 60 days grace period from the time it was put on the Federal Registry to become law. You have 60 days and then it becomes law. So January 20th of 2023 of this year is when it became law. But the FDA allowed a 3-year compliance time period. So they're giving everybody a 3-year grace period to be able to meet this requirement, this new requirement. And basically the new requirement is that we have to be able to track and trace by key data elements, lock codes and date codes, at every point in our supply chain and at every critical tracking event. They call them CTEs. So if I take in whole avocados and I make guacamole, I'm transforming those avocados from whole avocados to guacamole. So now there's new data on the guacamole, still tied to the avocados that came in. So we know what lock code and date code went into the guacamole, but now it's a new product. So that is one of the critical tracking events that has to be captured. So anyway, the idea is that we're going to be able to see product and know every step it took all the way through the supply chain, so that when we do have an issue, and they say these 50 restaurants, you know, had people get sick off their romaine lettuce, let's say, we'll be able to look at any data for lock codes they received and look for what's the common link here. There's got to be a common link. And then they can track that back to who made it and when it was grown and what field it came from and what the harvest crews were. All that data will be attached behind the scenes to that lock code, date code of the final product. So in simplistic terms, that's basically what it is. It's, and we have to be able to, we being whoever the FDA asks, whether it be a supplier, distributor, or a restaurant, has to be able to get them that information within 24 hours in an electronic format. So the FDA will come to you with basically the way they've always done is a 4 to 6 week window and say, I need to know every lot code that these restaurants served or received within this time frame. You got 24 hours to pull that together. Good luck if you can't automate the data collection.
And so anybody in that supply chain could be culpable, depending on who the FDA calls on.
Correct.
And my guess is it'll go in either direction. Whoever the FDA starts with, it'll go upstream or downstream.
Correct. They have very clear rules within the rule. Mm-hmm. For instance, an operator. Every single restaurant is responsible for capturing every lot code and date code of product they receive. That's their responsibility, even though the distributor is also accountable for capturing what they ship to every restaurant. The restaurant still is accountable for collecting that information themselves because it maybe someone made a mistake somewhere. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's really kind of a double check, but that happens all the way through the supply chain.
Am I right? Just getting back to the as you phrased it, withdraw episode. If there is a withdraw, it's not only about protecting the customers at that brand, but potentially other brands where that, if the source was just, let's say, on the farm, right?
Correct.
It would protect other people and other brands as well. So one of the words that just keeps kind of ringing in my ears right now is collaboration. It's interesting that everybody's culpable, but everybody has to work together to make this work. Is that fair?
Oh, that's not only fair, that is essential, yeah. in my viewpoint. That's something that's never been easy in the food service industry, is collaboration.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's between brands, between a brand and their suppliers, a brand and their distributors. Collaboration is something we have not done well. And I think if we don't do well with collaborating on this solution, on these solutions, there's multiple solutions, but we all need to be asking for the same thing. And I think it really starts with the operators. Because if the operators have one basic playbook for suppliers and one basic playbook for distributors on what it is we require you guys to be able to do, and this is how we're proposing that it be done, then you're going to wind up with a supplier that supplies to 10 different brands, has to have 10 different solutions. It's going to slow down implementation. It's going to add, you know, unnecessary cost to each brand rather than agreeing that this is one way that it can be done. Let's do it this way. And you're solving your operational need as a supplier for everyone that you serve. And think back, I don't know if you remember GFSI audits, Global Food Safety Initiative audits. That was supposed to solve all the audit problems in the food industry. Now all a plant would have to do is get one GFSI audit and submit it to everybody they want to do business with, and that would be acceptable. Well, that was a great theory, but every single brand added their own addendum to it. Now, when they go in to do a GFSI audit, they might have 10 other addendums that an auditor has to do. So it's not a universal audit. You know, people are still adding on their own requirements. And we have to, EDI is another great example. You know, when EDI came, that was supposed to be one standard for an ASN, an 856. This is it. But once again, everybody asked for their own version, a little bit different. So now every supplier, distributor that sends out an ASN has probably 20 different ways that they have to send it out. So they have to reprogram depending on whose requirements they're trying to meet. So we don't have time to do that with FSMA 204. We have to be very focused on collaborating with each other and looking to come up with a common solution that everyone can live with.
So the first thing that, pops into my head is we, as you mentioned, the food service supply chain has lacked collaboration, right? I think it's starting to change as the data becomes better. Is that fair?
I think it gets better as your resources diminish. I think everybody's really tapped out on IT resources everywhere. I mean, so if you don't have the resources to do it, then you have to lean on other solution partners, solution providers, and they can guide you, and they're going to guide everybody in a similar fashion. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. But yes, as we require more data, I think we are less independent and need to collaborate.
Great. The second thought that pops in my head is this all sounds very expensive. And in your opinion, who should pay for it?
Well, it can be very expensive. I will tell you this, through our pilot tests that was done and through others that I'm aware of, we believe that there is enough efficiencies that will be gained throughout the supply chain. Maybe the suppliers probably have the least opportunities to gain efficiencies, but they have some. But distributors have a huge opportunity to gain efficiencies, as do operators. Operators, like I said, we're doing faster inventories, more accurate inventories. It's going to lead to, first of all, suggestive ordering with AI right around the corner. It's going to lead to fully automated ordering, you know, where restaurants won't even have to order themselves. The distributor will just know what to send them. So I think there are a lot of operational efficiencies, and as well as inventory visibility efficiencies that we'll gain. I know our supply planning team at IPC would love to know the lock code of a product that every DC has. They would love to know that, because sometimes they'll look at orders and say, wow, they've really overordered on shredded lettuce. But maybe they overordered 2 weeks ago, and the reason that order that they're placed right now is huge is because a lot of their shredded lettuce is going to expire. So the supply planning team might cut that order and then have to turn around the next day and send a hot shot because the distributor goes, why'd you cut my order? I need it because I don't have any good inventory now. So there's a lot of efficiencies that can be gained throughout the supply chain. If we're successful at inventory visibility and product traceability, virtually one and the same, but knowing what's where and what the dates are on it has a huge benefit to most people within the supply chain.
So if I hear you correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, sounds like the onus of the expense should be on each party within the supply chain. Whereas, is it fair to say that in general, in the past, it's generally been shifted to one party?
Yeah, generally it's always the end user, the operator that pays
the brand
that pays the bill. And in this case, I'm sure initially that it'll start that way. But I think where each leg of the supply chain has to pay their own bills is to determine, okay, if I'm going to put RFID tags on every case and I'm going to collect that data as that product moves out of our warehouse and into a distributor's warehouse, it's really up to the supplier and the distributor to determine what technology they're going to implement to be able to collect that information. A distributor can use handhelds, they can use gateway readers, where, you know, this is why I think distributors have a huge opportunity here in operational efficiency. If you put a gateway reader in, as every pallet comes off of that truck, you can instantly capture lock code, date code, GTIN for every case on that pallet and have it flow right into your warehouse management system. So all you have to do is assign a slot and go put it away, rather than inspecting it, then fat fingering in the date codes that you received. So they needed to determine what they're going to spend on their tools to be able to utilize the data. And the same thing in restaurants. You could put readers all around the restaurants and just, you know, be able to collect movement of the product throughout the restaurant. Most fast food restaurants, you don't need that. You need it at the back door, you need a handheld, whatever. But that's where the investments should be by each individual within the supply chain. Then you're looking at the cost of the tags and everything, you know, depending on the size of the tag you're going to use, that cost will vary, but that'll probably flow through to the operator, to the brands initially. But I think there's enough efficiencies to more than offset the cost of those tags throughout the supply chain. I'm absolutely convinced of that. I think this is going to be a money saver for the industry in the long run once we really understand how to use it.
Yeah. And I can't help but, I agree with you 100%. And I can't help but think that is FSMA 204 a spark towards better collaboration amongst all in the industry? Because a lot of we're going to have to. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. Yes.
Yeah. So there's a lot of good things that I would guess a lot of operators or those in the supply chain are looking at the burden of FSMA 204, right? Understanding the benefits, but the burden, because, you know, we all know, as you said, it's different every day, right? A lot of times in food service, you're putting out fires a good amount of the time. Is that fair?
That is fair, yes.
So you could understand how someone might perceive this as a burden, but in the longer term, the longer run, I agree with you. Anything that is encouraging data and collaboration will improve efficiencies and quality and inevitably the experience for the consumer at the brand, which is the most important thing.
Right, absolutely.
So there are a couple more questions. So there are a few companies out there. I would guess we're going to have people listen to this podcast and they're going to start getting really nervous, right? And so there are some companies out there that are doing some interesting things. Would you mind mentioning along this space? Would you mind? And obviously, I'll give Rick a chance to talk about it more in a bit, but Rick is a free agent now doing some work, right, in this space. So, and I'll give Rick the opportunity towards the end how you get in contact with him, because he is a tremendous resource for this, folks. So anyways, could you speak to just a few of the companies that might be able to help?
Sure. And this isn't an exhaustive list, but ones that I know that are very, very much engaged right now. Avery Dennison from an RFID standpoint. You have Wiliot from a Bluetooth IoT standpoint. You have data aggregators, which is an important part of this. You need somebody that's going to pull all that data together and be able to give it to you in a easy to use format. So you have TrustWell, you have iFoodDS that just started implementing a solution with IBM Food Trust. There's several others that are out there that you can go to. If you're focused on RFID, it's going to be Avery Dennison. They're the big dog in the arena. But there are other opportunities. So that's why I think it's important to understand what will work for you and what you need, what your need is, and then start putting together a plan for implementation.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned just in an email, I know Armada is doing some interesting things around this too.
Armada is, and I know that Aerostream is exploring, pulling in some of this data. So I think a lot of companies are moving in that direction. And, you know, it could be the ones that are last in the pool will have the best solution. That's something that every brand and every company is going to have to kind of assess for themselves. And that's just to give a little plug. That's where I think I can add some value to, so I can help companies assess what will work for them. And that's really what I am excited to be able to be doing right now, is to help people, first of all, understand FSMA 204. Understand is just doing traceability for the products that the FDA has listed. All I'm going to do, which in my mind, that's short-sighted. I think you ought to do everything you get. I think you ought to do all the FDA, all the USDA products as well, all the proteins, everything else, so that everything coming into your restaurant, you have a control on knowing what you have and having visibility into what you have. that's where you're going to get your operational efficiencies. Having half your inventory tagged isn't going to do it. Then it's a cost. But having everything tagged is where you're going to get your efficiencies.
Amen. So how do people get in touch with you, Rick?
Right now, there's only two ways. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's Richard Buttner on LinkedIn. Or my email address is richardbuttner@gmail.com. I do have a website that will be under construction. I don't have that up and going yet, but that will be coming soon. And I'll put a link to that on my LinkedIn as well. So that might be the best place to look to connect. I know that's where we connected. Mm-hmm. So that works. We can definitely connect that way. And we can have a conversation. Tell me what you're looking to work on, what you need, and we can put a plan together to help.
So as we end, I just want to reiterate that Rick is certainly a champion in this space.
Thank you.
Not just for FSMA 204, but just in data collaboration throughout the supply chain. But certainly, I would recommend his value to anybody out there that needs some help. Rick, I want to thank you. Great conversation today. And hopefully we can do this again.
Well, thank you, David. I really appreciate the opportunity. And that would be great if we can do it again. Maybe do it a few months from now and see where the industry is.
And that brings us to the end of another insightful journey through the fields of innovation on Farm to Fork, The Innovators. It's an honor to have you listen. If you found today's episode as fascinating as we did, don't forget to share it with a friend, write a review, and hit that subscribe button so you never miss another episode. Farm to Fork is not just a podcast. It's a community of forward thinkers and change makers. Your thoughts and ideas matter to us. Reach out on social media or through our website, datamfs.com, and be a part of the ongoing conversation. As we wrap up today, remember, the future of the food supply chain is in our hands. Stay curious, stay innovative, and let's continue growing together. Until next time, this is David Maloney, signing off from Farm to Fork, The Innovators. Thank you for being a part of this community. See you in the next episode.